I'm Wilma Maynard. I live at the Camel's Hump View Country Inn in Moortown.
Perfect. Yeah, well, why don't we start with you grew up right here?
I've lived all my life here in Moortown. I went to the elementary school here when it was a two-room school. I believe I'm the fourth generation on my dad's side to live in Moortown. We had lived in Randolph the first year we were married, and then we moved to New Hampshire for a year, and our present place came up for sale, and I was anxious to get back to Moortown, so we decided to buy and run it as a country inn. I had known a previous family called the Coffrins, and they were a German family, and she ran it as a tourist home back in the 1930s, about 1934. And I had spoke to her after we had come here to live and was operating our business, and she told me that she rented her rooms for 50 cents a night back then. And we do a combination of farming. My husband, the first few years we were here, he worked in construction. He helped make the asphalt for Interstate 89, and he decided he wanted to put beef cattle on the farm, so we went into the white-faced Herefords, and he has a herd right now of 17, with expecting about 9 new little ones within the next 2 or 3 weeks. And we also run the little snack bar across the way, so that it keeps us pretty busy between both businesses. You know, we can survive.
Do you plant crops? And
we raise all of our own vegetables in the garden that we serve to our guests. And fruits. We have our own raspberries and strawberries. We have a little orchard started. And mainly everything that is served here at the inn, other than the meat, is raised right here on our farm, on the premises. We've raised our 5 children here, and they grew up in both businesses.
I was talking with Letty Conrad. She was saying that her mother first started paying guests on their front. Well, first of all, she threatened to go back to teaching during the Depression. And her husband didn't want her to do that, said the children needed her at home. So she started paying guests during the Depression to supplement their income.
This is one reason why that I started the guest business, because I had 2 little boys that were a year and just a couple months. And soon we had 3, 4, and 5 after that. So we took skiers in the wintertime. We started here the year that Sugarbush broke trails.
Oh, you did. So that was what?
1958. And with the children, I decided to stay at home and do the skiers in the wintertime, and then had my summers with the children. And then as they got older and got their own summer jobs, I did it year-round. And now we do have a lot of hikers. That we belong to a program called Country Inns Along the Trail, and we have a lot of hikers that come through, and they hike the long trail. And of course, one of the hikes around here that they enjoy is climbing Camel's Hump.
Yeah.
And which is one of the most hiked mountains in Vermont, and that is what that's how our farm got its name. When we moved in, we had a circular comm that said Camel's Hump View Farm, and I said to Jerry, "This must be the name of our place," so we put a sign up.
You mean You had a circular come to you saying...
It was one of these second-class circulars came, and on it, it said Camel's Hump View Farm, Moortown, Vermont. So it was evidently...
Meant for you.
Yeah, but I think it was the previous owners had called this farm that particular name, so we just continued.
So the first year, how many guests did you have?
Was
it busy?
Yes, there were hardly any inns in the valley at that time. There was the what they called the Snuggery, and there was the Clark's in Facedon. And so the ski area was asking anyone with private homes to open their doors that had extra bedrooms for guests. And so we did. It was mostly just weekends then. And I can remember our first guest we had was a family called the Turries from New York City. And he was a jeweler. He manufactured jewelry. He was Hungarian, and they had two boys, and he brought in his salesman with him, Bond, and his wife and two boys. And they kept coming back every year for about 10 years until the boys got into college. And here a few years ago, Andy Turry brought his wife back, and he has since taken over his dad's business, and so we still are connected with the family. We hear from him now and then, and he told us that his mom and dad had retired to Florida now, and they are in their late 70s, early 80s at this time. So it's real interesting to, you know, have them come back.
How many can you take at once?
We have around 16 is good, because I serve dinners. I'm not just a B&B now. I have always served dinners. They talked me, at first I was just sleeping people. Then they talked me into breakfast. And then they said, well, Mom, why don't you do dinner so we don't have to go out for dinner? So I got into dinners. And that's the way it got going. But it's a lot of fun. We don't get to travel too much, but we travel a lot just listening to the people that come in. We have had people from nearly every country in the world, I believe. One interesting group we had in was we had this delegation from Peking, China come, and there were five men and a lady interpreter by the name of Miss Wong, and we were their first stop in the United States. They flew into California, and then they flew direct from there to Burlington, Vermont. And two of the men had been in the States before, but three of them hadn't. And so it was very interesting, because they did not know anything about our way of living and all. And I remember feeding them pancakes the first morning. And Miss Wong had not come down yet, and the three other five men were seated around the table, and I put the pancakes on, and they picked them up in their hands and started to eat the pancakes like toast. So I had to show them how you put the pancakes on the plate and pour the melted butter on and then the maple syrup so that they could eat it like that. And they were just so pleased. They spent 3 days with us, and when they left, they said, we hope we can come back again. And at the time, I had a group of hikers in, and they were fascinated with this group that I had from Peking, China. And they got right up and sang them a nice welcoming song. And this group, they really enjoyed it. The men jumped right up and bowed and were real pleased. And before they left, the second night that they were in, I had a gentleman in from Saskatchewan, Canada, that was hiking the long trail. And he was going to go to Peking, China on an exchange. He taught at a college in Saskatchewan. And so he was very interested in the group. And I introduced him to Miss Wong, and as it turned out, he was going to go over and study at the same university that her brother was going to. And so she invited him to come to her home in January to visit the family. And they exchanged addresses and things so he would be able to get in touch with her.
That's amazing. Has your clientele changed much over the
years? Yes, in a way it has, because the young people, with the cost of skiing today, we do not get the family people that we used to get years ago. Now, back when we first started out, lift tickets were $8 compared to $38, $39 a piece now. And I had this family that would come in, and they had 5 children. And the father told me that the children ran newspaper routes and had their own jobs, and they would earn enough during the period of a year to buy their lift ticket for the week, and then he would pay for their stay here so they could come on a family vacation. But today, you just don't see the families coming and staying for at least a week at a time like you used to.
So you don't, that hasn't gone over to the cross-country skiers then?
We do get some cross-country skiers. Not too many. Of course, your younger children, I think they like the downhill better. We do a lot of cross country, but I think the younger people tend to like riding up and riding down. But we had one young fellow called us this year, and he remembered coming skiing and staying with us, and he made reservations. So his two children, he said, "I haven't been up to your place in 30 years. And he said, "I want my two children, my son and daughter, to have the same experience that I had at that age." So he brought his two children in. And, you know, that was kind of different this year. We did see people that we hadn't seen in years that came back, which surprised me with the economy the way it was. But there again, there were others that I assume were losing jobs and things down country, and they just didn't, you didn't see them. They were having rough times.
Has the, from when Sugarbush first opened and Mad River, I guess, was going, have there been sort of major changes in the way of life in the valley?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It bothers me to see the mountains all built up to condos. And, I can't help but think that you've seen it out west, where that they cut for so many buildings up there. It has a lot to do with our rainforests, and it can't help but harm our water supply here in this area. I have seen the Mad River. It used to be fairly leveled out year-round. Now you come back in the summertime, and there's hardly any water going down that river. And I can't help but believe that with the development up there and drilling for all these wells and things, that it has some effect on our water supply down here. And I know as long as there's the snow on the mountains, it tends to give the farmers a later start in getting their crops going, because the air is so chilly. That wind blows cool as long as there's snow on top of those mountains. You know, it's good, it's bad. It's brought in the good and it's brought in the bad. Now, when I grew up, we never locked a door. Even when we bought here in 58, you could go into Montpelier and not lock your door and never had to worry. Now you can't even go a mile into Moortown without locking your door. And that's not good. You even have to make sure your car's locked in the parking lot in town, because they're smashing windows and grabbing whatever might be in sight. And it seems to be happening day and night now. It's not just... So, you know, it's brought in money to the area. It's true. But I'm kind of old-fashioned, and that isn't all there is to life, you know. I tend to think some of the old ways in the old days were just as good.
One of the things I was talking with Marion Wallace about was the different character of the different towns, Moortown and Waitsfield and Warren, and she was characterizing them. And I haven't really started to interview extensively about Moortown, but it sounds to me like it was very different than Warren and Waitsfield in that it was almost a company town. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Moortown was. It was Ward Lumber Company owned the two mills. When I grew up, they owned the two mills. They owned the two stores. They had a hardware store and a grocery store. Nearly everyone in town worked for Ward Lumber Company. I guess I have to thank my parents. They got us on the road to be an independent. And, you know, one of my brothers was a teacher, and I went into the secretarial work. And then my younger brothers are in carpentry work, so that we did not have to rely on working at the mill like a lot of the people did, because it seemed like they didn't really get anywhere.
Well, it was like a double-edged sword.
Yes. Yes, it was. A lot of the men, they would work by the week and buy their groceries or their, you know, the general store sold clothing, shoes, whatever. You could get anything there, medicines. And they always took what you had purchased during the week out of your paycheck. So sometimes the men were lucky if they had $10 left in their pay envelope when they picked it up on Friday afternoon. And this is one reason why they, you know, it was hard for them to get ahead. They never knew what was going to be in there if they didn't keep good records at the end of the week.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was definitely a mill town. Definitely. Other than what farming went on.
And really locked up by one family, I guess.
Yes, yes. You see, the wards have, went through at least four generations. Hiram, Burton, Merlin, and then Holly. Now we have just the one clapboard mill left.
And
Holly runs that now. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I don't think, I think he owns one other one in Maine, maybe. And I think those are the only two in New England. And as far as I know, there are not too many more in the whole country, if there are any more.
Yeah, I've been thinking I should definitely interview Baird.
Andy Baird.
Yeah.
Andy Baird Jr., yes, that's right, because his dad ran that mill for a long time.
And it was, the mills were such an important part of the whole valley. And
yes.
Now look.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yeah, you see, that's what the industry was right around this area. And then, of course, we had the Tout Mine over on the Waterbury side of Moortown. Where,
do you remember that running?
I knew it was running, but I was not old enough to really know that much about it. Of course, up on the other Maynard farm here, the Bisbee farm. It's the old John Bisbee farm,
okay.
Yes, right here on the corner. There's a mine up on there.
Oh,
a
really?
Tout mine up on their land. Yeah.
The one, and that's, is that your husband's father?
Cousin.
Cousin. And that's where you take 100, is that where
it's
100
where,
turns?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That farm that sits right in the corner there. Yeah. The road to the Tout mine is the one that's right across from the Church of the Crucified One down here.
Mm-hmm. I'll be darned.
Yeah. There's no buildings left there, but Jerry told me that he can remember when he first helped his uncle on the farm here that there were still, you know, pieces of structure standing there. And that was back in the early 50s, 1950-51.
Yeah, because there were talk mines, or a talc mine over in, well, just outside of Waterbury.
Yes, yeah, that's where the main mine was.
So it's all part of that complex?
I believe so. I believe so. The understanding I had was that they supplied for Johnson Baby Products.
It's funny, as I've interviewed around Vermont, there have been a couple of areas I've hit that, you know, and they all do it for Johnson's.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. Now, you know, back, like I was saying, when I was growing up, we used to have the box socials at the town hall, and the wards, of course, having the businesses. We used to have the community Christmas tree a night or two before Christmas, and the school children would put on a program, and then wards would get these two huge, great big trees and have them set up in the town hall, and they'd be decorated with whatever, and they'd put gloves and things on the trees for the men, you know, and the children, every child in town got a candy box, if nothing else. And that sticks in my mind as, you know, the way they did back then. That would be back in the 43, 44.
Yeah, your mother was funny talking about that, because she said, where I came from, we didn't do that. Yeah. She said, I sort of resented it.
Yeah, she did. That's why we went to Montpelier High School and got our education. That's where she graduated from.
I had to laugh.
Yeah. Of course, they had the, you know, they'd have whole dances at the town hall. My uncles played Green Mountain Rangers.
I had forgotten that, because I interviewed Earl Long, and I think he used to play with your uncles, too.
That could be. Was he a violinist?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he did. Another one was Alden Bettis.
Oh, did he play?
He played.
No, I interviewed him.
Yeah, he filled in their band. In fact, Alden and Uncle Raymond still play at the Cabin Follies in Waitsville.
Oh.
They have them in March.
I had wanted to go to that and missed it this
year. Yeah.
What does Alden play? Does he play the fiddle?
Tuba, I believe.
Tuba.
Tuba.
Yeah, I've been impressed with the amount of music there was in this valley.
Really? Yes.
And some of the people still remember the old songs.
Oh, yes. Definitely. Yeah. No, music, they, Ed Irish and the Baird family, all into music. A lot of it, yeah.
And did your uncles always play?
Oh, yes. Yeah, Uncle Kenneth plays the guitar, Uncle Raymond the accordion, and, well, when I was growing up, you know, as long as you went to Uncle Raymond and Uncle Kenneth's band, you know, their dances, I could go. So I always made sure I went to their dances. That way I got to a dance on Saturday night. And my grandfather was there. Of course, he wouldn't miss a dance anyway.
So he played too? Or?
He didn't play. Lots of times he took tickets at the door, and he went for the social time. He enjoyed seeing the people and
whatever. Where did your uncles learn to play then? Did they pick it up at home? Or?
You know, I am not sure of that. I am not sure just where they learned to play. See, my dad played the saxophone.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. In fact, our grandson, his great-grandson, has been taking lessons on his saxophone at the Waterbury Elementary School. Yeah. And Dad played in the Waitsfield Town Band. Now, you see, Uncle Raymond and Uncle Kenneth, they were more interested in the dance bands instead of the, what I want to say, the brass horn mm-hmm. ensembles and that type
did,
of thing.
Did they used to sing at all, or?
No, neither one of them did. They had a fellow, Harvey Richardson. He was from Riverton. He sang. And this Walter Brooks that I told you about, he played the drums. Warren White, and he's back here living in town.
I interviewed him.
Did you? He used to call some of their dances.
Oh, he didn't tell me that. But
yes.
He told me the story, a wonderful story, of a guy that wanted a job with Ward's and said he could drive a team and was given two mules to drive. And the mules ran away with him and the wagon got all smashed up and Ward fired him. And somebody else, I don't remember who it was, wrote a poem about it, which he recited.
Uh-huh.
And it was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He used to call the square dances and... I can't think of who else. I know Harvey Richardson sang, but I can't think of who else did sing with Uncle Raymond's band. But they played for years around. Played in Warren.
They still play?
I had them up, what was it, 3 or 4 years ago, and they played on our snack bar lawn for Mom's 75th birthday party. We had a little family get together, and Uncle Raymond was up and in the afternoon, and I mentioned it was Mother's birthday, and he said, "Oh, how old is she?" And I said, 75. He said, "I ought to come up and play her a tune." I said, "We're all getting together after we close the snack bar tonight at 9. And he said, "I should bring my accordion and play Happy Birthday to her." And I said, "Come right ahead and do it." So he did. We had music and all kinds of it.
Do you run your snack bar all year round or just in
No,
the summer?
Just we open the first weekend in May and close Labor Day weekend. And we started that when we had 3 children in college. We figured that would give them something to do in the summertime and help put them through college.
And you're the only place, really, if you think about it, you can pick up a hamburger or a hot dog.
This is all window service, and there's one little one. It's a trailer over on in Duxbury
mm-hmm.
that opened up 2 or 3 years ago. And other than that, yes, yeah. Used to be Gaylord's, Hap Gaylord. They had a snack bar at one time down in Waitsfield.
Yeah, that's right. I've forgotten that.
But I believe we were the first ones to have the Taylor soft ice cream machine.
Uh-huh.
And serve the creamies here. Otherwise, you had to drive into Montpelier for them. It's a going spot, but it's very much weather orientated.
Oh,
you know, it has to be a good day, and people come out. Otherwise,
now,
we play a lot of cribbage.
Yeah, you have to sort of tend it.
Jerry and I run it most of the time ourselves. Once in a while, our daughter or daughter-in-law will come in and give us a hand. But we figure we'll do what we can do and let it go with that.
And then you start having people about now?
Our hikers will be starting... around the 21st of May this year, and I serve them dinner, and we sleep them and give them breakfast and put them up a trail lunch. And our oldest daughter, of course, these are all by reservation, so I know when I have dinners to serve, so I get everything ready, get it prepared, and she comes in and serves for me.
Great.
And because I'm busy in the snack bar
yeah.
with Jerry on the grill. Yep. So that works out fine.
And are you full most of the summer or most weekends or?
You know, it's very you never know. It's very spotty. You have people that come by and just side the road and stop in, or you do get them with reservations, but there are so many inns in the area now that there's a lot of competition. Every here for the last, I'd say, 8 or 10 years, every big old house that was sold was turned into a B&B. And even the people that come by, they'll say, we have never seen so many B&Bs in such a small locality. And so it's very competitive.
The fact that you've been here for a while, though, must give you a little bit of a leg up.
We find that for advertising, the word of mouth is the best. And yes, because do you cut some of this out?
No.
I tell you.